Welcome, everyone, to Creating a Family, talk about adoption and foster care. Today, we're going to be talking about what does connected parenting look like during the shutdown. This is the last in a five-part series we've been doing on surviving and hopefully thriving during the coronavirus shutdown. The first four were surviving being cooped up with your kids during coronavirus isolation, homeschooling kids on top of everything else, how to juggle kids, schooling, and work during corona without losing our minds, and using this time of shutdown to develop resiliency in our kids and family. Now, you can find all of those, the past four in the series, a number of places. One, you could go to our website, creatingafamily.org, hover over the word resources in the horizontal menu, and then click on podcast. But the easiest way, honestly, is just to subscribe to our podcast. And hey, look, you're enjoying this, so you ought to be subscribing. So choose your whatever podcasting app you like. If you use an iPhone, there's one built in. And if you're listening to this right now via your phone, just use that one, obviously. The name is Creating a Family, Talk About Infertility and Adoption. And then you have access not only to the five-part series, but to honestly, probably 300 to 400 episodes of some of the best darn education you can get. So we recommend that you pop right over there and you subscribe and you won't regret it. So today we're going to be talking about what does connected parenting look like during the shutdown. We'll be talking with Amanda Purvis. She is a training specialist with the Karen Purvis Institute of Child Development. And we're going to be talking about, with her, about connected parenting and TBRI and how we apply it during this time of additional stress and everything else. If you haven't listened, Amanda did a couple of months ago, she did a podcast on practical applications of TBRI, and it remains one of our most popular and honestly one of my favorite in all the times that we've been doing this. So I am particularly happy to be talking with you again, Amanda.
I feel the same way. I feel like it's coming home. So it's good to see you and chat again.
Yeah. Well, and never is there more appropriate time for us to be thinking about connected parenting, because parenting right now is harder because of so many reasons, not the least of which is that we're being asked to be a teacher, and not a teacher to just one subject, mind you, but every darn subject our kids have. We're also having to be the chief cook and bottle washer for all the meals, and our kids seem to be eating so much. And we're parenting all the time. I mean, it's 24/7, even though we had breaks before, and we really aren't doing that. And to add on top of all that, the fact that, I mean, we are being isolated for a reason. There is a pandemic going on. So we're worried about, of course, our health and the health of our loved ones, but also the loss of jobs. Or if we're fortunate enough to have our job, trying to keep it by being able to work at home. So for everything we just mentioned, this is a stressful time, and connected parenting is more important than ever. So why? I've just said it was more important. Let me give you the opportunity to tell us, why do you think it's more important right now than ever?
Well, you're exactly right in introing it that way with everything that everyone's got on their plate. I think that it can seem like one more thing that we have to do. And in reality, that's not the case at all. I like to think of connected parenting as kind of the foundation for all of those other things that you just talked about. The foundation for school, the foundation for our work, the foundation for all of those things. And so I think really ultimately, why do we need to do this? Is because when we're connected with our kids and with each other, in reality, it reduces stress, it reduces anxiety, and it reduces fear. And when we have those things reduced for our kids, then we do see better behaviors, better learning, better comprehension, and all of those things that probably most of us are struggling with right now with our kids reduce the more connected that we are.
And it's circular, because when we see our kids doing better, that reduces our stress, and we're able to do better. So it's a circular thing.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And when we feel more connected, ultimately, connection is kind of this kitschy word, but when we're talking about connecting with kids, what that means is having fun. I mean, ultimately, that's it. If you are having fun with your kids, then they feel safe and they feel connected. And so really what I would say the most important thing is, like, how can we have fun right now? And what does that look like in this new normal that we're all in? And how do we reduce that stress, anxiety, fear, school, you know, all of that stuff? And it's by having fun.
So would this be a recommendation for all kids or just kids who've experienced early life trauma?
That's a great question. I think anytime someone hears about TBRI and connected parenting, trauma informed, all of those things kind of initiates this thought process that this is for kids who have experienced trauma. And in reality, I think we've done ourselves a disservice in that way, because ultimately what all of this research and science is about creating healthy brains and healthy relationships. So it's targeted at kids who have experienced trauma, teens who have experienced trauma, but ultimately it works for everyone. It's just that those of us who haven't experienced trauma have most likely already, you know, had all the things that we talk about in trauma-informed parenting or mm-hmm. trust-based relational intervention. So that's kind of the difference here. If you do some of the things that we're talking about today with kids who have not experienced trauma, you will only see great results. Mm-hmm. So it's not, and we actually really encourage people, you don't just do this stuff with, you know, let's say if you have multiple kids in your home, some bio and some not, you don't just do this with your non-biological kids, right? Like this goes across the board. I like to say TBRI works on anyone, whether it be your spouse, the grocery store clerk, your dog, your kids, the teachers, because in reality, it's just this relational way of doing business.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about, tell us some about something, simplify it for us. What are some of the founding principles of connected parenting as envisioned by Dr. Karen Purvis in her wonderful book, The Connected Child? And everybody, if you have not read it, now would be a great time to purchase this and find a time during the shutdown to read it, because it really would be balm for a restless soul right now. But what are some of the founding principles that is not only about in the connected child, but also incorporated into trust-based relational intervention, which people have heard it called TBRI, but that's what it stands for.
Yeah, so TBRI has three principles, but those three principles are built on this foundation of understanding trauma, right? Which I think most people who listen to this have an understanding of what trauma is. We've kind of narrowed it down to these risk factors that kids have experienced. So those can be prenatal, if, you know, bio mom had experienced stress or drug abuse, homelessness, right? Anything that would change the chemicals in biological mom's brain and body, therefore affects the growing fetus. So prenatal, at birth, and then early hospitalization. So like pre-verbal, early hospitalization, and then abuse, neglect, trauma, and system effects. So that's kind of what we define as trauma. And that has a ton of research and history behind it, with the ACEs study, which people can look up. And that's the Adverse Childhood Experience Study. So with all of that in mind, when we understand that those experiences change the brain, the body, the biology, the behavior, and the belief system of kids, then and only then can we utilize the principles of TBRI. Because if you don't understand that those things have been changed in your child as a result of the trauma they've experienced, then you won't buy into the principles of TBRI. You know, when you have a kid throwing a fit, and we say, sit down next to them, put an arm around them and say, what do you need, buddy? And get them a snack. You're going to think we're crazy unless you understand that their brain looks different because of X, Y, and Z. Therefore, a dose of protein will change the neurotransmitter levels in their brain, which will then help them to calm down and will help their learning and comprehension around whatever you need to teach them or help them through in that moment. But if you don't understand that that trauma has changed that brain, then you're going to say, I'm not going to give my kid a snack right now. That would be, encouraging them.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like spoiling them rotten. We're not going to do that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's kind of that foundation first, is understanding that they are working from a different place than people who haven't experienced trauma. So once we are at that place together, then we can talk about the three principles, which are the connecting principles, which are our foundation. And those are based in attachment theory and understanding attachment. Research shows that most kids who have been in foster care or who have been adopted have attachment stuff. And so understanding attachment is vital to building a healthy connection. When we think about the normal way a baby comes into the world, we spend at least 2 years just connecting with that baby before we ever begin really correcting their behavior. Right. And when they're two and they first grab that toy from another friend and we say, no. Right. We've already had 2 years of falling in love with that baby and connecting at a deep, deep level. And so, again, thinking through what does attachment look like with our kids? And we do that through the engagement principles and then through the mindfulness principles. And very quickly, the engagement principles have to do with, eye contact, touch, voice, all of those things. And they look different if you're talking to a teenager or a six-year-old, but the principles are still the same. So how do we do that? How do we, all of that stuff is explained in the book, like you said, or in our resources. Mm-hmm. And then I think we'll probably get into some of it today as well. And then the mindfulness principles. And that's a huge piece of TBRI is understanding where we're at as caregivers and what we are seeing the behaviors through. Because what we say is we see the child in front of us through our own history. Mm-hmm. And so it's really hard for me to be able to identify your needs if all I can see is my past and what my history tells me about the situation in front of me. And so we talk about being present in the moment and then understanding what we bring to the table based on our history and also based on our current circumstances, which is a huge piece of what we'll talk about today with Corona, right? Our current circumstances look different than they ever have. So, you mentioned in the intro about, losing a job or having your job, but now having to do it while teaching your children at home, mm-hmm. right? Just that alone, like if we don't talk about the pandemic, if we don't talk about, the stress, just that piece alone affects all of us, whether we want it to or not, and therefore affects the way that we are seeing our children. So that is foundational for TBRI, is owning our part of every interaction that we have with children.
Mm-hmm. I think that is so fun. I think owning what we bring to the table is so crucial, and it's so easy to overlook because we live in the world we live in. We live in the body and the mind and the mindset and the temperament and the personality that's where we're coming from. And we see in our history and we see it all from that perspective, and being able to step out of that and recognize that part of what we are seeing is because of our history and because of how we respond to stress or how we respond to the stress of finances, how we respond to the stress of possible illness or of loss of life, which is something that's natural, but there's some of us who've had past histories that make this time particularly stressful. And so we're bringing additional stress. And how we view success, like all of a sudden, are we being judged as a parent because, our kid is the one kid who the teacher is calling, saying, Johnny is not paying attention in online class, or Johnny didn't come in, or Johnny's not doing his assignment, or whatever. And how does that reflect on us? And how do we view it as reflecting on us?
Yeah, you're exactly right. And that really is the definition of mindfulness, right? The ability to step outside of ourselves in the moment and perceive, the entire interaction from different people's point of views. So you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. So that's our foundation, is that connection piece and mindfulness and engagement. Then we move up to empowering. And we believe that we have to empower kids' brains and bodies through our physiological strategies, and then we have to empower their environment through our ecological strategies. So that has to do with understanding sensory needs, sensory input, understanding, you know, hydration, blood sugar, you know, food and nutrition, how all of that plays into effect for our children. When we talk about how trauma changes their bodies and their biology, a lot of that comes into effect here. And then, you know, empowering their environments. How do we create an environment where they can succeed based on their individual needs? So that's our empowering principles. And so when we, again, think about, you know, being on lockdown in our homes and, you know, not able, like all of, you know, what that looks like, knowing that we have kids who need to move their bodies, who need to be outside, you know, all of that. And then we get to our correcting principles. So we know that there will be behaviors that we have to deal with. But how can we, first of all, do it proactively? And that's where we put a ton of emphasis in TBRI, is our proactive teaching, right? Because discipline means to teach. So how can we teach to these behaviors? And then we do have to respond. And so when we respond to behaviors, this is how we do it. So that's kind of in a nutshell, TBRI.
And you know, one of the things that I will put in as an aside, I think there is a lot of misunderstanding between that connected parenting or attachment parenting or TBRI means basically letting the kids do whatever they want.
Permissive.
It's permissive. And I will say 100%, I was fortunate enough to interview Dr. Purvis a number of times. I can't remember how many now, 3 or 4. And that is so not what she is saying. If there's nothing permissive about it, it's just a different, it's the foundation is teaching and but still having expectations. So.
Yeah, you're exactly right. We talk about the structure nurture balance. And I think oftentimes we as parents are pretty high structure, many of us, but then when we
raising
hear TBRI, yeah, me too. So then when we hear TBRI for the first time, we just, all we hear is the nurture aspect of it. But really what TBRI is, this balance. We say, you know, if you lead with structure, that's fine. But the next step has to be nurture, mm-hmm. and then structure and then nurture. And it's this dance that we're doing all day long. And kind of my note is, that's why we're exhausted every night, right? Because we're dancing all night, uh-huh. or all day long. Yeah. And we're structured. Just think about getting like a 3-year-old to get his shoes on and get in the car, right? You're like, no, you can't bring 75 stuffed animals. Nope, we're going to put on these shoes. Nope, sit down. Good job.
Just
okay,
put your darn socks on.
Yeah. And we're just dancing. You know, that's a 39-step dance, mm-hmm. to get their shoes on. Right. Mm-hmm. So,
and when they're 3, sometimes you just pick their little butts up, slap them into the car seat, strap them in, and say, I'll deal with it later. But not so easy when they're 6, 8, 10, 12, whatever. So you're dancing 16, harder as as they age. Yeah.
Right. And then they learn how to dance, right?
Oh, yeah. So, darn it.
So, yeah. That's part of the fun. So all that to say is TBRI is really high structure, and we're also really high nurture. Mm-hmm. And so those have to come evenly. If we lead with too much nurture, we impede growth. If we have too much structure, we impede trust. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it really is this balancing dance that we're doing. And some of us are really good at one of those, and we have to be more proactive in doing the other one.
Mm-hmm. I think most of us have one side that we do better at. And right. So we have to, one is more natural to us. And it probably has a bit to do, or not a bit, but probably a lot to do with how we were raised.
Exactly.
Yeah. That coming back into the mindfulness part.
Yeah. And then we can even get into in this time, you know, if you're co-parenting, what does it look like, you know, when one parent, you know, moves into the high structure and then the other parent, you know, gets nervous and moves into the high nurture and, you know, mm-hmm. so yeah, there's a lot of dynamics at play.
All right. So let's apply it to some specific situations that our community has sent in. All right, the first one. Kids fighting with each other constantly, but especially at the end of the day.
So with each of these problems, what I would encourage everyone to think through is through those three lenses of how can we connect, how can we empower, and how can we correct in each of these situations. Okay. So for me, when I think about kids fighting throughout the day and at the end of the day, it kind of gets, you know, to its peak. When they're little, we call that the witching hour, right?
Mm-hmm. That's one way to say it. There's other words, but go ahead. I called it the arsenic hour, but go ahead.
Okay. But with that in mind, you know, how are we connecting with each of our kids individually throughout the day? What does that look like? Some of our kids need to start off their day with a point of connection. So like I have one kiddo who, if I don't greet him in the morning a specific way and spend, even if it's just 2 minutes of one-on-one, you know, nurturing time with him, then that doesn't, you know, then our day gets off to a terrible start. So what does that look like? So how are we connecting throughout the day? When we think about kids fighting, what I think about is a lot of energy and not a good place to put it. And so what are some structured activities that we can do to get these kids moving their bodies physically? And it might be separate. That's okay. When we talk about understanding our kids and how their history plays into this whole game, sometimes there are going to be siblings who are butting heads all the time. And I often find that those are kids who have differing, usually opposing sensory profiles. So we might have a kid who's really, really touchy-feely and always wants to be next to someone and touching them. And, you know, all of that physical contact stuff is really life-giving to them. And then we might have a sibling who that is life-sucking, right? Mm-hmm. Being touched, being, you know, is really alerting to them and sends them kind of into that downstairs fight, flight, or freeze brain. It could be one kid who's really, really loud because sensory-wise that helps them to process, and one kid who hates loud noise or constant noise. Mm-hmm. So sometimes even just understanding our kids better will help, again, us change our frame of thinking around the behavior. If this is a sensory issue where I have two kids butting heads because they're just opposing in how they process the world, then I need to respond to that differently than if these are two bored kids. Right? So, you know, really getting at the why behind the behavior. Are these kids who are driving each other nuts because they look at the world differently? And if so, I need to give different activities for those kids, right? This kid might need to go outside and have some quiet time, read a book in the hammock. This kid might need to go downstairs and jump in the jump castle. And that's okay in those times. They don't have to be together. Or if they're bored, what activity can we do together? And how much can I be involved/ do I want to be involved? Mm-hmm. And that goes into that caregiver piece of, you know, what are we doing for ourselves and how are we balancing all of this?
And quite frankly, parents, especially at the end of the day, don't want to, for the most part, do not want to be. I used to always say that, you know, there's no quality parenting going on in my house from 5 to 7. Well, 5 to 6. After dinner, we kind of shift into better quality. But I at that point, I don't really want to. Okay, so keep going. Walk us through. So you've identified what the issues are, right?
Right. So one thing I would say to what you just said is that's okay. Mm-hmm. I think that we all have in our mind this idea that we're supposed to be parenting at 100%, 100% of the time. And that's why we all feel like failures. So I just first want people to hear me say, that's not a good bar for yourself. You need to lower the bar.
Oh, don't worry. I definitely lowered the bar.
And so like, maybe if this is the hard time in your kid's day, maybe the answer is this is when we do electronics.
Exactly. That was my answer.
5 to 6:30. Yeah.
Yeah. I said TV or our computer games or our video games. They are an effective babysitter, and we don't use them at other times in our house. But between 5 and 6, that's screen time.
Yep. And that's perfect. That's a perfect example to me, mm-hmm. where everybody is feeling successful and happy about it. And no one's feeling like the bad kid or the bad parent at the end of that. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. right? You got a break, they got a break from each other. Maybe this is the time when we use that. Mm-hmm. I don't think that electronics are evil. If we're, you know, using the proper amount of time and mm-hmm. all those things, and guess what? The proper amount of time might be different during Corona.
Yeah. You know, I'm so glad you said that. And we'll come, but we're going to wait because that was one of the situations that came up. Yeah. Okay. So
connecting, you know, have we connected with these kids? Do they feel connected to us? And do they feel connected to each other? Does there need to be some sort of relational repair that we need to maybe help them through in that moment? Sometimes just us coming in and for 3 to 5 minutes, kind of not refereeing, but helping kids to communicate to each other. You hurt my feelings an hour ago in the pool when you called me a name. So now I'm refusing to play soccer with you just to make you mad because I'm still hurt, right? Mm-hmm. So that's something that I can fix. And then they can go on about the soccer game. So helping, you know, that connection, if that's it, right? So we check in with ourselves and with each of the kids. Have we connected? Where are we at with that? And then we empower them physiologically. So where are their brains and bodies at? This might be a time when they need a snack. Mm-hmm. If just like electronics can sometimes be an easy answer, so can a protein-rich snack. Sometimes it just takes some peanut butter pretzels or, you know, some avocado dip and carrots, and then suddenly they've come up with a new game and off they go. So is this a time when I can either increase their protein intake or their hydration levels during this time? If we want to think about it through the correction lens, being proactive, hey, if we're realizing at 4:30 or 5 every day, just we are all tanking, then at 4:15, I'm going to be serving up a snack. Mm-hmm. And making a plan with everybody, right? Hey, while we eat our, you know, guacamole and carrots, do you guys want to play soccer before dinner? Do you each need, you know, 45 minutes on a screen? You know, what are your choices? And giving choices. So that's when we get into that proactive piece, is giving choices to kids and adding in some structure to what the next hour and a half before dinner is going to look like.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Excellent. All right, you ready for the next situation?
I'm ready.
Okay. Well, this is a big one. We have quite a few different ways that this plays out. I'm sure this will come as a total surprise to you. Meltdowns over schoolwork. So we're all homeschooling our kids at this point. So we have a number of different scenarios that have been, situations that have been sent in that are particularly stressful. One, not finishing assignments. And we did not put ages around this. So if you need to qualify, feel free to. But anyway, not finishing assignments. So the school has set up assignments. And this is a latter elementary age or beginning fifth or sixth grader. So not finishing their assignments.
So a couple things around that. Before I say anything about school, I just want to say that I have 5 children who we are currently homeschooling from middle school to elementary school age. And 3 of them have diagnosed like extreme learning things happening. So I am speaking from someone who is in the trenches with you all. So my ideas, I hope they don't sound too haughty or high flying, because I'm literally trying all the things today. So with that in mind, in terms of later elementary school, specifically putting that age range on this, the first thing I would say is, again, taking our trauma-informed lens. Most of our kids, even if they hadn't experienced trauma up until this point, we are now nationally, globally experiencing a trauma. So understanding that one of the first things that we lose when we're stressed is our organizational thinking and our strategic thinking. So I currently have a 6th grader who his teacher gives them assignments on Monday that are due on Friday. And he just gets, you know, a big list of assignments that are then due at the end of the week. He absolutely does not have the ability to figure out what each day should look like or how to complete it. Any of those assignments. I have a second grader who can do that on her own. Mm-hmm. So I have to have different bars for each of my kids. For him, I literally need to walk through, okay, for this project, here's what we're going to do on Monday. Here's what we're going to do on Tuesday. Here's what we're going to, and I have to do that piece for him right now. Because my bar is at a different place for him than it is for my second grader. And that's how it is. And if I didn't do that, he wouldn't complete them. Mm-hmm. I do that, and there are still assignments he doesn't complete. And so just to kind of give my overall thing about school, if my kids are not connected to me at the end of the coronavirus, I will have a lifelong issue with my children. If their attachment is not healthy and they do not feel safe in my home, we will have lifelong ramifications. If he misses the last 6 weeks of school, we will not have lifelong ramifications. Mm-hmm. Our school sent out a video, and the principal has a ruler, and it's, you know, the 12-inch ruler. And she said, you know, this month and a half, this 2 months is literally a centimeter and a half in the 12 years of your children's learning. Mm-hmm. Please give yourself grace.
A very wise principal.
I love my children's school. But all that to say, I cannot stress enough that if it's too hard, don't do it. Because life is too hard right now and we have to keep living. So
I want people, I could not agree with you more. And I feel sometimes like I'm beating my head against a wall when I keep saying, so don't do the assignments, just and talk to the schools and say, my kid is really struggling right now. We're not going to do, we will do a third or a half or five or whatever, you know, we're going to set our own, I'm going to set my own bar here and it's not going to be where yours is.
And I'm going to change it every day.
Yeah, exactly.
There are some days when, you know, we can get a lot done and everybody's doing great. And then there are other days where it's like, never mind, let's go play outside. Mm-hmm. Because we can actually make up for this all in an hour of not fighting for the next 4 hours. You know, like if we go out and have fun in the backyard right now and come back in 3 hours, we can get done what we needed to in a very short amount mm-hmm. of time when we're all connected and in a better place. Mm-hmm. And also, like, there's something called the school of life. So yes. if my kids aren't going to do math, like sometimes my choices are, hey, if you don't want to do Khan Academy today, then you can help me make the brownies at dinner. And that means you're going to be measuring, you're going to be figuring, you know, I'm only going to give you a half cup and you need 1.5 cups. And so you'll have to figure out how, right? And, mm-hmm. and we just figure, and that's their math for the day. And I'm not going to tell the teacher anything.
Yeah. Well, unless, of course, then you may have to, because if the teacher can see that the assignment was not done, then, and you're the one who said to the kid, yeah, okay, we're doing the brownies tonight, we're going to blow this off, then, yeah. But I'm finding that teachers are much more accepting than people that parents are anticipating.
I haven't had one teacher push back on anything. And I think that, honestly, I feel for teachers right now. So I cannot imagine what they've gone through. So just even that in and of itself, like, I think they are expecting us to give them grace right now. And so they're really welcome to give us grace.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay. Let's talk about, I'm going to say it both ways. Not being able or not being willing to work independently, because sometimes it's hard to tell. Are they not working independently because they're not able, or because they would rather just have us sit there with them when, honestly, we would like to be doing something else while they're doing this, their school?
Yeah. Yep, I have some of those. So here's what we've done with that is when we are able and willing, we sit there, and when we aren't, we don't. And we get done what we get done that day. And sometimes that means, like, I have a 14-year-old who is a biological child who will not complete an assignment unless I am sitting there making sure. Otherwise, he turns in blank assignments so that all I see is that he turned it in. Mm-hmm. But then when I open it, it's blank, right? Mm-hmm. Unless I've been sitting there. And so, because he's figured out how to skirt the system. If I'm not sitting there, so I've told him, I will give you an hour a day to sit here with you and help you through some of this. And he's like, I don't need your help. I'm fully aware. That's why I'm only going to give you an hour a day. So the structure there is I'm going to give you an hour. So you pick what you need my help with or don't need my help with and want me to just sit here and watch you do. And the nurture is, but I'm going to be there. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's our structure, nurture, balance with him. With my third grader, he needs me to turn in the assignment. I can give him the assignment and he'll do it, but the actual IT around turning it in and right, all that piece I need to do. So it's again structuring some of our time and expectations of our children and of ourselves. So if you have multiple kids in your home, we have found, we first started doing this where we were all trying to do it at once. It was too much for my husband and I, right? we couldn't balance it all in our heads because we have five kids who each have eight subjects, right? Do the math. We couldn't figure it out.
I can't do the math. And that's the problem. That's why I'm struggling with doing math help. Go ahead.
I definitely don't know how to do the math the correct way.
Yeah, yeah. I could have come up with an answer. Yeah, I think. Right. Let me see. I have to go back to my multiplication tables, but go ahead.
So all that to say, we realized, okay, we're going to do these two first. And we sit down with two kids for an hour and we can almost get them done. The next two take a couple more hours, but we sit there for an hour with them and the other hour we don't. Then we do our, and so for us, but then in 4 hours, we can get it done, but we're not trying to do everybody at once. It was too much for us. We were too stressed. We were yelling at the kids. The kids were fine. We were not. Mm-hmm. So we, but it's gonna look different. Give yourself grace. Give your kids grace. They don't want to learn online. Just like you don't want to teach them online, right? Mm-hmm. This is not their preferred learning method either. If you do have a kid who this is their preferred learning method, congrats. We're not talking to you.
Yeah, I was just going to say, well, just don't say anything right now, okay? Right. Because, and it also changes as to what's happening in your house. If you are both your partner, are both trying to work from home, it's going to look differently there too, because you might be using time when they're, you might be having your computer sitting there doing, checking emails while they're doing, again, you're going to have to adjust what your expectations are for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. We always say, fast, fluid, and flexible. You have to be those three things when you're parenting kids from drama. The flexibility piece could not be more important right now. We have just got to be flexible. And luckily, most of our work, piece, I think employers are really being flexible right now, understanding that parents are doing the best they can. And mm-hmm. so just allowing yourself some grace.
Mm-hmm. Okay, another situation was brought up was resisting the parent as a teacher, hearing from them, you're not my teacher, you're not as good as Miss Jones, you don't do it the right way, you're not saying it the right way, or whatever.
So what I would say is, if this is bothering you, it's all about you, and you just have got to get that off your, they're right. Miss Jones is better than you at teaching them math. Mm-hmm. She is probably a better teacher because she signed up to be their teacher and mm-hmm. you didn't. So if they're saying that, the best thing you can do is just agree. Mm-hmm. You're right. I wish that this wasn't the truth. This wasn't our reality. And
I am
so
baking Miss Jones a pie. And as soon as I can get it to her, she's going to get it. Okay. Right. Hats off to Miss Jones.
Yeah. And just, I think, that is a part of kids expressing how they feel. And we have to be okay with negative feelings and positive feelings. And the negative feelings are okay. Just like you're mad that you have to teach them right now, they're mad that you have to teach them right now.
Yeah.
So be okay with it. Don't take it personally. It has nothing to do with you. And the way we learned math is way better, but it doesn't, like, they don't care. They do not care that we can do it much faster and much easier.
Yeah. And it makes a lot more sense. Okay.
Yes. We just have to let that stuff go. And whatever that looks like for you, if that means you need to go for a run halfway through school to let it go, or go for a walk, or go, you know, have a beverage in the backyard alone, you know, whatever that looks like for you as a parent, to just let some of that go, because it's so not personal. Just like 90% of things that teenagers say aren't personal. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, this isn't personal. It's not about you. And it has everything to do with their frustration with the system right now.
Or they're smart enough to know that you're going to take the bait, and then they won't, and then they aren't going to have to be doing their work, because they're going to be discussing how they shouldn't be telling you you're not as good. So yeah, they've either outsmarted you, or they're just expressing their frustration. And either way, it's not a, there's no win in this for you.
Yeah. Yeah. If that becomes a button for you, they'll push it.
Right? Oh yeah.
Because buttons equal power. And when they're feeling powerless, all they have to do is push your buttons, and then they're in control of the situation.
Mm-hmm,
so exactly. Don't let that be a button.
Mm-hmm. What about, the resisting or tantruming when it comes time to do schoolwork?
So what I would do is, after that's all over, I would proactively, so going to our correcting principal, proactively make a plan for the next day, around what is it going to look like, using your child and their voice. So saying, okay, listen, buddy, we're not going to do school today. Let's make a plan for tomorrow, and you get to tell me, what do you want to have for breakfast? Here's your choices. Maybe after breakfast, what if we did, right? And whatever, I'm making this up as I go along. You don't have to do it this way, but making a plan with the child where they have a voice. That tantrum has everything to do with them feeling completely out of control. All of the regularly scheduled life has been canceled. And so they are feeling completely, and for our kids especially, that is so, so triggering. Mm-hmm. And so giving them as much voice as possible around what the schedule will look like. So, okay, tomorrow, what do you need for breakfast, A or B? Okay, then we'll do, let's say, an hour of work. And then where do you want to play soccer? In the backyard, or do you want to go to outside the fence to the green space? Okay, after we do that, we'll do an hour more of school, and then I'll make lunch. Do you want this or this, right? And giving them a voice in what the schedule will look like, I think will greatly decrease that.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, just letting them express themselves. I don't want to do school. I don't want to learn online. I hate this. I hate that you're my teacher. I hate you.
Mm-hmm.
I hear you. I hear you. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry that this is the way the year has had to end. I'm so sorry. When we think about, for our kids, how transitions are so important, there was zero transition to this, right? And so we just triggered everything for them. They don't get to say goodbye to their teachers the right way. They didn't get to say goodbye to their friends the right way. We have no time frame to give them around what this will look like, when this will end, when life will return to normal.
Mm-hmm.
So of course our kids are being triggered. Of course. That's why I'm saying, like, the bar has to be so low for our kids right now when it comes to school, because every fear of theirs has just been triggered.
Mm-hmm.
So what can that look like moving forward?
Mm-hmm. And that we won't always, let us hope, be in this space. So a low bar now does not mean a low bar forever.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right. The next situation, since you have a 14-year-old, you may appreciate some of this. Teens staying up all night and then sleeping all day.
So some of my answers probably aren't as gentle as they should be, but if they're
hitting a little too close to home here, man.
Well, here's what I mean is, if they're staying up all night, they obviously have access to things to keep them up all night.
Yeah.
And if you're not okay with that, then change that. If you are okay with that and they want to flip their schedule right now, let them. But like for me, like my teenager does not have a phone or a computer after 8 p.m. at night. So he's real bored by about 9:30. Mm-hmm. So that's not going to happen with him. If he did have his computer or phone, you better believe he would be up all night playing mm-hmm. games, talking to friends. You know, of course he will. So you have to decide how much power you want to give them around that. And if you do, decide that in your family, that's okay. And that's a battle you're not going to fight, then you have to live with the consequences. Like what I say is choose the hill you want to die on. Cause once you choose it, you will die there. Right. Yeah, so, yeah. So if that's, you know, if that's not important to you, then let them flip their schedule, let them stay up all night and get some of their, if they're getting their schoolwork done, whatever that looks like for them. But if they're not, or that is important to you, then don't allow them access to the things that are keeping them up all night. Cause like my 14-year-old has a novel in his room and that's it. So, you know, he falls asleep around 9:30 or 10 every night reading his book. Mm-hmm.
Okay, excellent. Let me pause here and say to you that this show is brought to you with the support of our underwriter, the Jockey Being Family Foundation. Hope for the future is what drives the mission of Jockey Being Family, helping to provide crucial post-adoption support to all adoptive families so that they can remain strong and together forever. They believe that every child deserves to experience unconditional love of a family, and they aim to make that dream a reality for all. To help support them and their mission, please go to their website, jockeybeingfamily.com/donate. All right, we are talking today about how connected parenting looks during this time of shutdown. And we're going through scenarios that have been suggested by our community. And so the next one that comes up, and we started talking about it sooner, how do you deal with battles over screen time? Been told, I mean, you can't pick up a magazine and not read about how damaging screen time is and how we should be limiting it. And yet right now we are our kids and we are all under a lot of stress. So where do screens, and that would include video games, any type of screen, their phone, quite frankly, TV, the whole thing. How does that fit into parenting, and how do we deal with battles that can rage over screen time?
Right now, I think that maybe the message of this whole call is that we're lowering the bar, right? So what does screen time look like for us and our families, and creating maybe a new normal during our new normal? So for us, before this whole episode, my kids had 1 hour of screen time on Wednesdays and Fridays and Saturdays. So 3 days a week, they had 1 hour of screen time. Right now, they all have at least an hour a day. And there are some days when I have extra calls, or I have a ton more work to do, or my husband is gone. And so I have to do everything, where they're getting more than that. Mm-hmm. And I have just, for us, I've said for now, that's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. That is not our long-term goal as a family. But for now, that's what it's going to be. Obviously there's tons of safety protocols and, you know, all those things mm-hmm. in place around screens for our family. But I have lowered the bar there. Mm-hmm. And there are days when they get more because I need them to have more.
Mm-hmm. What I say is use it judiciously. Don't just allow it to happen anytime and whenever, but when you need it, use it. And because you're not giving it to them all the time, when you need a break because you just really are, well, you've got to work. Let's say you've got a project that has to be finished that day and you need time to work. Well, because they didn't start the day with screens. So then when you offer it to them at 1 o'clock, it still has its entertainment value. And then I don't think screens are the enemy, and I don't think what we do now is necessarily going to be reflective of what we do, hopefully, next month.
Right. That's exactly right. And I originally, when all this started, I because school is online, I was like, well, they're already on screen so much, you know, we're not going to have any screen time after school. And then what I found happening was they were rushing through their school to say, look, I was only on the screen for an hour and a half, or, you know,
yeah.
So could I still have 30 minutes, or, you know, and so yeah. Then I realized, like, I can't count that against them,
yeah.
That they're on the screen for school. So, I mean, when we do it normal life, when they come home from school, everybody needs a reset. So, you know, you have a snack and then you have 30 minutes on a screen. You watch a funny, you know, sitcom, whatever it is. And then we go on about our life. So now that's what we've done. Like, when we're done with school, you go outside and you have a snack and then you come in and you can have, you know, your screen time. And then we go and have fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, just be, we have a lot to stress about.
Yeah.
This, I don't think, needs to be one of them right now.
Yeah. And the other thing, you know, as your children's principal said, this period of time in our children's life is, you know, a millimeter, you know, in their life. And the data damage that extra screen time is going to do is, it's not going to kill them.
Right. Well, and honestly, if it's way more damaging if we are losing our cool with our kids and, causing relational rifts. Mm-hmm. So if that means that you need them to have more screen time that day because that's how you're taking care of you,
yeah.
That is actually helping your kids.
Mm-hmm.
So look at it that way. Mm-hmm. Tell your mother-in-law.
Yeah. Yeah. Or don't tell your mother-in-law or your mother, even that you're doing it. Yeah. Say, nope, our kids don't have screen time.
Yeah. But if that's how you take care of you, then I am 100% for it. Because if you're not taking care of you, your kids will deeply, deeply suffer.
Yeah. And that's a perfect segue into, you know, you had talked about, we have to recognize what we as the parents are bringing to the table. And that includes the stress that we're under right now. And if we're stressed about our job, or we are stressed about a looming recession or depression or whatever, or the second wave or whatever it is that is stressing us out, our abilities to cope, our ability to be connected with our children is lowered because we're walking into this with a high level. And if anything else, it should give us some appreciation for our poor kiddos who have come from traumatic backgrounds. And, you know, their level of stress and is set at a higher level. So use, if nothing else, try to have a little self-awareness to realize that this gives us an inkling into what they may be experiencing on an everyday basis. But so how do we take care of ourselves? And I love the fact that part of it may be lowering your rules as far as the amount of screen time your kids have, because if they are absorbed in screens, it gives you a break. And but do it judiciously so that you're choosing when it happens so that it's really nourishing to you, if that's why you're doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like we could talk for an hour about this because it's so vital. In reality, it's really foundational to everything else that we're talking about. Because if you're not okay, your kids will not be okay.
Mm-hmm. They won't be.
And that's just the bottom line. I mean, that's neuroscience, that's attachment research. You know, everything says that if we as the caregivers are stressed, tired, burnout, scared, fearful, whatever it is, our kids know that and they feel that, and then they respond from that place. That's how they're designed to be. So maybe, you know, maybe your self-care plan is realizing that everyone is operating in your home based on, you know, where you're at. And so what does your whole house need to do to get you to a healthy place?
Mm-hmm.
And that might mean a week off of school, mm-hmm. right? Like, we're going to take a vacation, email the teachers, we're on vacation next week. And that's what you do to get yourself in a good place. My husband and I talk a lot about, and this idea came from Brené Brown's Family Gap Plan, but this idea is when you are co-parenting, there are days when you absolutely cannot bring 100% of yourself to the table, and that's okay. If you're co-parenting, then you have that discussion about, you know, hey, here, today I can bring 50%. And, you know, your partner might say, good, because I only got 50% today too. Perfect. And we're good to go. But if I'm coming to the table with 20% and my partner's coming to the table with 20%, then that means we have a 60% gap, right? And so what are we doing about that and making a plan? Maybe that's the day when we're doing extra screen time, mm-hmm. right? Or maybe that's the day that we're having a Star Wars movie marathon mm-hmm. or, yeah. you know, what does that look like? And what is your plan for that? And along those lines as well, in TBRI, we talk a lot about passing the baton and the idea that there are times when your kids will be pushing your buttons because you're not in a good place or because mm-hmm. of your history or whatever it might be. And that it's okay to pass the baton if you have that the ability to do that, meaning you do have someone else to pass the baton to. And as long as at the end of it, you come back around and circle back and reconnect with that child. So, you know, doing that. And then what are you doing when either you've passed the baton or you've, you know, taken a time out yourself and you're in your room, what are you actually doing to feel better? Mm-hmm. Because if scrolling social media doesn't help you to feel better, let's not just veg out for 30 minutes and scroll social media, mm-hmm. right? What is it that helps you to feel better? And being really honest with yourself. You know, does that mean taking a walk? Does that mean calling a friend or a family member? Does that mean, you know, going out, like for us, you know, going for, to me, a hike is there's nothing better in the world. And I can still do that right now. So what that looks like on some days for me is saying, I need the afternoon to myself and going for a hike. And sometimes I'll bring one or two kids, but that feels really different than the seven of us going on a hike. Mm-hmm. And so what do you do to fill your bucket? Mm-hmm. First of all, if you don't know, you need to figure it out. Second of all, most likely many of the things you used to do, you now cannot, or that's changed, right? Like, so my husband, our gap plan was, you know, when he needs a break, he goes to the gym. Well, there's no gym anymore. Mm-hmm. So what does that look like for him now? For me, you know, it was going to see a friend. Well, I can go for a walk and talk to my friend on the phone right now. So I will do that. Mm-hmm. But what are those things for you? Do you have a safe place to vent? Because if you don't, then you will vent to your children, right? Mm-hmm. It's okay to vent out. It's not okay to vent down. So, you know, who is it that you're calling and saying, I'm a terrible teacher. Mm-hmm. I hate teaching. I don't, right? Or
plus I have terrible children. I want you to know I'd be a better teacher if right. I didn't have terrible children.
Right.
It's them, not me.
Yeah. Right.
That's venting out, not down.
Yeah. Right. Right. So like vent out, that's fine. Who is that person for you? And do that. And if you don't have that person, call someone and say, I had someone call me today and say, this is a vent. Please listen, don't respond. And I was like, got it, right? Like, don't hold me accountable for anything I'm about to say. I probably don't mean it, but right now I really mean it, you know? And having those relationships. So figuring out what that looks like for you and giving yourself a lot of, you know, I was talking to my grandma who is 93 on the phone. And she said, oh, Amanda, I bet she could hear me doing dishes. And she said, oh, I bet you're in the kitchen all day long from cooking, you know, all day for the kids. And I said, I don't cook anymore. And I love to cook. I love to cook. But I'm not doing that right now. All I'm doing is preparing meals. I'm preparing frozen pot stickers, you know, turkey and cheese sandwiches, cutting apple. I'm just like a sous chef, right? I'm not actually making any good food because that would be too stressful to me to have to go to the grocery store and figure out the ingredients and multiple stores right now. And for many people right now, cooking is their relief and their mm-hmm. outlet. Mm-hmm. For me right now, that's not, it's too stressful and overwhelming with the amount of kids I have to feed and how quickly they're going through food. So I am buying a ton of frozen food and hot dogs and, you know, things mm-hmm. like that. And I've had to lower the bar there because mm-hmm. I would rather heat up 10 hot dogs for lunch and throw away 7 paper towels as their plates than yeah. I would, you know, to make a meal. And that's taking care of me, and yes. that's okay. Mm-hmm.
And that goes back to saying what you're doing now. So hopefully come June, you can get back into cooking if you want to. You may actually get used to this and say, you know what, there is something to this. But so that is the giving yourself grace, which is to say, we are all coping right now the best way we can. How can I take care of myself? What can I let go of? And if cooking gives you pleasure, or if eating, you don't want to eat the hot dog, you know, it's like, okay, no, thank you. I'd rather spend the time to cook because I really want a, you know, a chickpea right. stew or whatever, then fine. But that's not you. So you're not doing it.
Right. Yeah. Oh, no. My husband is buying us really nice food out and getting it delivered. And we have really great food. And our kids are eating.
Okay. Now, I like you all the more, Amanda. That's what I would have done because I really like good food. But I, you know, yeah, I would absolutely, in fact, have done that in the past because we didn't have Lunchables often that when I would buy, my kids thought the biggest treat in the world was a Lunchable. So when we were on vacation, they would get Lunchables in the evening and we would get takeout of a really nice meal.
Yeah, that's exactly what we do. And my kids are loving it because we don't eat hot dogs. And like, I bought Pop-Tarts the other day and like my kids were like, I've always heard of these. These are amazing.
You know, the best mom in the world.
And that's like totally feeding their souls right now. And I'm just letting it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, let's be honest, and you could spend more money on your really nice meal that you're getting, you know.
Okay. Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
We probably sound like really not too good parenting experts right here, but I actually don't agree. I think that good parenting. That's taking care of nurturing. We've got to be self-nurturing now. So I actually think it's brilliant.
So, well, I'm with you then.
Yeah, me too. Well, thank you so much for being with us today to talk about this, both this really important topic and also because I just really enjoy talking with you. I do think this is something this is a topic that we absolutely have to get the message out for. Let me pause and just thank two more of our partners. These are agencies that believe in our mission of providing interviews like this to you, both for pre-adoptive families, but also post-adoption and pre-foster and post-foster. So these agencies believe in our mission and are willing to support us. One of them is Children's Connection. They are an adoption agency providing services for domestic infant adoption and embryo donation and adoption throughout the U.S., as well as providing home study and post-adoption support to families in Texas. And we also have Adoption from the Heart. They, for the past over 35 years, actually, they have helped create over 7,000 families through domestic infant adoption. Adoptions from the Heart can also provide home study only services. They work with people all across the U.S. and are fully licensed in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, Delaware, Virginia, and Connecticut. Now, Amanda, for people who want more information about connected parenting and about TBRI, which is trust-based relational intervention, where would they go to get that?
So you can go to our website, which is child.tcu, Texas Christian University.edu. And that website has a resources link. We also have a YouTube channel, the Karen Purvis Institute of Child Development, with lots and lots of videos and things on there. And right now, for the next, I think, 60 days, you can get a bunch of our resources on our website for free that we are offering. So TBRI 101, which is like an online classroom for TBRI for free. So there's a lot of, there's another one for teachers called Trauma-Informed Classrooms that's free right now. So there's some great resources out there for free on our website.
The TBRI 101 is superb. So I don't know the others. I'm sure they are as well, but if that's free, you guys pop over there and Don't let that one go by. Thank you again, Amanda. Let me say that the views expressed in this show are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of Creating a Family, our partners, or our underwriters. Keep in mind that the information given in this interview is general advice. To understand how it applies to your specific situation, you need to work with your adoption or foster care professional. And thanks for joining us today, and I will see you next week.